The Fan on Demand.
Stroman and the Jays one-hit the Red Sox.
The 1-2 swung on and missed. Marcus Stroman struck out Brock Holt three times today. He has not allowed a hit through six innings.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
7:02, good morning, Brady and Walker. What a show put on by Marcus Stroman yesterday at the Rogers Center. I'm Andrew Walker. I was there at the game. He's Eric Smith. You were there with your old man. When were you getting the feeling that you might be witnessing something special?
Fifth inning. When he got through that, you know, to me, you've made it through that halfway point. You're just watching him mow through guys. Haven't seen a ball hit out of the infield yet. It was the fifth inning, and then to see him go out there and do it again in the sixth, and the fact that the crowd to me wasn't jacked. I think they were just sort of quietly buzzing.
Yeah, they were a different kind of jacked.
Yeah.
I was jacked, but I was quiet as a mouse. Yeah.
That's what I mean, though. You're not loud and over the top, not boisterous. Everybody's just kind of respecting the moment in a sense, watching and waiting in anticipation to see what kind of happens. And then it, you know, of course, I'm not gonna say falls apart, but ends
bloop single
in the seventh with the bloop, but then still, you know, great way to get out of the inning. And then, you know, the bullpen, even though they had a little bit of issues, still locking it down for a one hit shutout. Fantastic game.
It did get real after five, but midway through the sixth, I really started to think about Marcus Stroman's pitch count. And now, it wasn't a good thing that Victorino ended it, but this would have been, I swear it would have been, a real controversial look. So there's Marcus Stroman through six innings. He's no-hitting the Boston Red Sox in an 8-0 game. And he's thrown 90 pitches. At the end of the day, there still has to be a pitch count here, right? John Gibbons wasn't going to have an easy decision going forward.
No. And I think that if I were in his shoes, you got to let the kid go for it. And I know there have been combined no-hitters before. This is one of those moments.
I would have.
I'm simply saying I would have.
Okay, so let's say he gets through eight and he's thrown 127 pitches. You're letting Stroman come back out for the ninth?
Yes. Tell you why. Oh. Because of how he got out in the sixth on, what, five, six pitches?
Yeah, I'm saying that was after the base hit.
I get that. But if you're in the ninth, he's throwing 125 pitches, I let him out there. If he gets the first guy in a couple of pitches, you almost take it maybe by a player by player situation. Because at the end of the day, the win is the most important thing, not the individual accolades. But those moments, I think, are so rare that I think you've got to give a guy an opportunity. So you're right on the brink at 96 pitches. If you have a fairly quick eighth, I mean, if you were able to do the eighth and 15 and under, I'm going to switch up your number. Instead of being 120 or 125 pitches, if you get through the eighth on 15, 16 pitches and you're at like 110, 112, I think you give the guy a shot to get out there in the ninth.
But how telling was this? Stroman was cruising. They weren't touching him. And he threw 96 pitches through seven, and he didn't even come back for the eighth. He was only at 96. If there was no worry about any semblance of a pitch count, why wasn't he going for the shutout? Why wasn't he at least throwing one more inning?
I don't think that matters as much. Once it's been broken up, it doesn't matter.
But it doesn't matter. But if you're cruising, you're cruising.
I think perhaps,
they didn't even let him go to 100. They were going to let him go to 130?
I think perhaps if the game is 1-2-3-0, maybe he's out there. The fact that you had a big-time lead, you're not going for the no-hitter anymore, why bring him out there? Let the bullpen finish it. Because even if the bullpen struggles and you don't get the shutout, you got an 8-run cushion. So I think that probably factored in as well.
590-590 is the text line. And at Fan590Walker, at Eric_Smith on Twitter. Actually, Ben Ennis, Sportsnet, tweets that he had a thought on this. He says, it's telling, again, telling that they didn't let him go to 100. If he goes a little further, there's no way they let him throw 130 in a no-hit bid, which sucks. It does suck. And John Gibbons would have been booed if Stroman didn't come out for the ninth. But this is still about, or is it? Is it about the team? Is it about the big picture? Or is it about the moments? 20 years from now, people might not remember how many games back the Blue Jays were, but they would remember a Stroman no-hitter.
And so would Stroman himself as well. I mean, as long as we as fans, as long as the league values it as a stat, as a you know, key part of history, I think that it does matter. I think you do sort of respect that moment. I mean, I guess in my mind, you know, there's got to be a number that at some point is the cutoff for me. I guess it's just not 120 to 125. I'm willing to go a little bit higher.
150? What's your
number? I don't
know.
I guess that would be it. I don't know. Like if, you know, in a you know, bizarro world, which we actually saw in another game yesterday, if this went to extra innings and he was still out there in the ninth, no, I'm not bringing him out for extras. Like, no matter what the number is, you got to shut it down at some point. But I think that you got to kind of seize the opportunity yesterday. Luckily, Givens didn't have to put himself in that position, because it's funny, the last couple of days, that's been the topic of conversation or one of the angles on both days. Pitch count that is going to be there, and innings count more specifically for Sanchez. And then you go the next day and Stroman puts up a gem, but we're talking as much about what could have been with the pitch count as much as we are the actual game itself.
We've talked about Alex Anthopoulos and deals. Don't you do a deal? Do you make a deal? And we've done this for the last month or two. Now, I said yesterday, and I think we agreed yesterday, that what I see now is, if Anthopoulos wants to add somebody, great. If you want to bring in some depth or another arm or some bullpen help, do what you got to do. But under no circumstance do I want to see Stroman and Sanchez traded. There is no deal for me that those two guys are involved in.
No deal.
And people tweeted in yesterday, and they had their response. We took a couple calls, and we will take a couple of your calls after 8 today. But there was more than a few that disagreed and said, it is about going for it. And you got to be willing, even still, to part with those guys. After yesterday, are we not fully convinced that there's nobody even out there who's gonna be as good as Marcus Stroman is right now, let alone in the next 5-10 years?
Yeah, I think I was one of the ones that said I'd be willing to deal one of them, not both of them, and only if I know that David Price is going to sign a long-term contract. So basically, I guess I'm in the camp that won't trade them, because you can't get that guarantee for sure that a guy like Price would stay. Let me ask you this. So I'm going to twist your question. We're both in the same camp. There's a lot of people out there as well. I know they're all over Twitter saying, no way would I deal Sanchez. No way would I deal Stroman.
You idiots wanted to deal Stroman like 3 weeks ago.
What happens, though, Andrew, to play the hypothetical, I'm being, you know, the devil's advocate here. What happens at the end of the season? September 30th rolls around. The Jays miss the postseason. The offseason comes. You're excited that you got Sanchez and Stroman going forward, but you've missed the playoffs yet again. And what are you looking at as your core, as your team going into next year, and where do you put yourself in the American League East?
To me, if they miss the playoffs, worst case scenario, let's say they lose on the last day of the season and miss, I'm still glad I didn't trade Stroman and Sanchez.
Okay.
I'm still glad.
So you think the core is still good enough, especially with two young arms likely added into the mix next year, to be a contender in their division next year?
I'm not saying you won't have to make improvements over the offseason. I'm not saying a year of full health wouldn't be really, really helpful to this club, but is it worth sacrificing, whether it means a playoff spot or not, is it worth sacrificing what you're going to get out of these studs for the rest of their careers? Not even close. 7:10, Brady and Walker, let's get you what you need to know.
This is your Friday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith. Blue Jays Yankees tonight, starting at 7. Also, Blue Jays ticket window, courtesy of the Great Blue Heron Casino, opening up in just 4 minutes from now. Stay tuned. Number 6, we just discussed this, but running back Ray Rice of the Baltimore Ravens, a 2-game suspension handed down from Roger Goodell yesterday following his offseason arrest for domestic violence. Does it say something is very wrong with the NFL if he would have got double that if he would have been caught with a joint?
It's grossly a suspension that reeks of not being fair compared to the level playing field that should be out there for drugs versus domestic abuse versus whatever.
Are we too hard on the drugs, or are we too easy on the domestic abuse?
Based on this, too hard on the drugs. And listen, you should still be cracking down, but it can't be 4 games for a joint, but 2 for knocking your wife out and dragging her by her arm limp out of an elevator. It's ridiculous.
Number 5, another NFL running back, Marshawn Lynch, will be holding out of Seattle Seahawks training camp to renegotiate a deal. So says his close friend and former teammate Michael Robinson said yesterday on the NFL Network. Lynch is 3 years into a four-year deal, is due to make $5.5 million this season, and is holding out for a bigger payday. I'm all for NFL running backs renegotiating when they're not being paid what they deserve. You have a brief window to make your dough, and it takes a heck of a toll, as we know, on your body. But is there a limit here? It's not like Marshawn Lynch is grossly underpaid. He's still pulling in $5.5 million.
Yeah, it's $5.5 million. You're coming off a Super Bowl season. You're trying to keep, I would assume, as a team, payroll relatively in check to keep talent around to maybe make a run again this year. And why wait until the heels of training camp to do this? If you're that pissed off about it, why not do it earlier in the summer and try to get something done then? Make it known to the organization that you want something done before camp, as opposed to potentially
the organization is going to say no. That's why he's holding out. Chris Johnson ran for 2,000 yards and was making $800,000. By all means, renegotiate. Go nuts. Knock yourself out. When you're making $5.5 million, it goes from, okay, you deserve this. It just looks greedy.
Plus, I don't like the fact that he's running roughshod through the league and he's got a ring, as he kind of did half of this in Buffalo at best. That kind of still stings.
Number four, Lars Eller re-signs in Montreal. It's a four-year deal, $14 million. He's the latest to avoid arbitration. Don't forget, Brady and Walker were on the air Monday. James Reimer's arbitration hearing is coming up on that day. Number three, RBC Canadian Open at Royal Montreal. Make sure you stay tuned in about 9 minutes from now, 7:22. Longtime golf commentator Peter Oosterhuis will join us to talk about round one. And it wasn't Graham DeLette or David Hearn who made the big noise on day one. It was Canadian amateur Taylor Pendrish, a 5-under-65. He sits one shot off the lead. The only problem is the lead is held by Michael Putnam and Tim Petrovic. Not exactly a sterling field on top of the leaderboard at Royal Montreal.
And your guy, Stephen Ames, where's he at?
Who cares?
Okay.
Number two, AL East update. Baltimore still 3 up after a 4-0 win over Seattle. Yankees hold off Texas 4-2. And they made them play the whole game. They let the Yankees get away with a 9-inning win, not 4.5. That was brutal. And the number one thing you need to know, Jays, they were ruthless against the Red Sox. An 8-0 win. They take 3 of 4 tonight. It's Carota and Burley at Yankee Stadium. The Toronto Blue Jays have lost 16 straight at Yankee Stadium. Can they rebound with a victory tonight? The Blue Jays ticket window opens up every morning at 7:14, brought to you by the Great Blue Heron Casino. We want to send you to the Jays and the Orioles. It'll be a big game on August the 6th. Here's our trivia question. Who is the last team the Orioles beat in the World Series? Give us a call right now, 416-870-0590. Star 590 on your cell phone or toll-free. 888-666-0590. Who was the last team the Orioles beat in the World Series? Can the young Canadian do what no Canadian has done in the last 60 years? We will ask longtime CBS golf analyst Peter Oosterhuis coming up.
Keep it here for more Brady and Walker, only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
7:22, good morning, Brady and Walker. Congratulations to Alan in Thornhill.
Hey, everybody, we're all going to get laid.
Especially Alan, maybe after the game. He's going to the Jays and Orioles on August the 6th. That is going to be a massive game. Blue Jays take a window, brought to you at the Great Blue Heron Casino. Our question this morning was, who's the last team the Orioles beat in the World Series? The answer was the Philadelphia Phillies back in 1983. RBC Canadian Open at Royal Montreal. Yeah, the top of the leaderboard doesn't really get you too excited. Admittedly, Tim Petrovic is leading the way. However, the Canadian amateur, Taylor Pendrith, with a 5-under-65, is called by our own Ian Leggett yesterday. And we'll see what happens on day two. Graham DeLette is 1-under. David Hearn out of Brantford, Ontario, is 3-under. A Canadian has not won this event in 60 years. Very pleased to be joined by longtime CBS golf analyst, a former Canadian Open winner back in 1981, except that was at Glen Abbey. It is Peter Oosterhuis joining us now on Brady and Walker. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Good morning. Just fine. Thank you.
Tell us about the course yesterday. There was a lot of numbers in the red, a lot of guys going low.
Well, I think the course was in fantastic condition. I mean, absolutely perfect. The greens were running beautifully. And, I mean, very light winds. There wasn't enough wind to mess with the players. And a good number of them took advantage.
Peter, you look at the leaderboard right now. Granted, it's only after one day. I know this wasn't necessarily a stacked field going in with some of the big names, but some of the names that were there for us to recognize, not seeing a lot of them amongst the leaders. This seems like going into the second day could be a wide-open tournament for a lot of folks.
Well, I think it is. I mean, you've got to say well played to those guys who are leading, but for them to keep going for another 54 holes onto a win is unlikely. You never know. I mean, weird things can happen. But, it's just the first day, and it was good to see, with the excellent conditions and lack of wind, some guys took advantage of it. The greens are just superb, rolling so smoothly. If somebody's putting well, they can make it from anywhere.
CBS golf analyst Peter Osterhaus, our guest on Brady and Walker. It's been 60 years since a Canadian won this event. We saw a great opening round from the amateur, Taylor Pendrith. You won this event way back when, upwards of 30 years ago. How much would it mean for a Canadian to pull this out?
Well, I think it would mean a huge amount. I mean, it would mean a lot for anybody to win the Canadian Open. It's, it's a special event. It has been for a long, long time. But obviously for a Canadian, the fans are going to go absolutely berserk out there if a Canadian comes down the last hole on the way to a victory. So it would be special. I mean, there's a long way to go. You can never tell who's going to win.
Peter, talk to me and tell me if I'm wrong with this assessment. When you won in 81, and if we go back, whether it even be 20 years, there was a time when the Canadian Open was considered by many to be sort of like the, another major, the fifth major or something. But now, based on the lack of talent sometimes that comes up because of its spot on the calendar, is that ultimately the biggest setback in a sense for the Canadian Open at this point?
Well, I suppose so. Yes, it's surprising. I mean, as you say, that the Canadian Open had the best players in the world playing it. I managed to win the Canadian Open, and Jack Nicklaus was had an eagle putt at the last hole to tie me. And another year, I was playing with Lee Trevino in the last round when he went on to win. So the biggest names in the game were there. I don't know what's happened. I guess there are so many tournaments and there's so much money to be made. The players don't play as many tournaments as they used to. They pick and choose, and maybe the Americans say, well, I'm just going to stay at home and not go to Canada. I don't know. It's really weird because Canadian Open is played on some exceptional courses. It has huge support from the local fans. So it's a shame it hasn't held up the way it used to be.
Peter Osterhaus, our guest. How difficult is it for, the big thing is you could have it the week after the Masters and it'd be okay, but it's the jet coming back over from England or Scotland, or it's the jet lag. How difficult is it to land and then basically turn around and play in such a high level tournament?
Well, I mean, these guys should be used to that, shouldn't they? I mean, it's not as if they're showing up, they're not flying in on the Thursday morning. They're going to be there on the Monday or Tuesday. The top players are going to be playing in a pro-am on Wednesday to get to, help them get to know the course. There's a limited amount of excuses for this. The top player, guys can get ready. They're used to traveling. That's what they have to do these days.
Peter, you talk about one of the guys that isn't there, and I say this all the time. It seems like you can't have a golf conversation without Tiger Woods' name being at least mentioned once. Would you agree at this point that perhaps this would be a good tournament for Tiger to play in some of the smaller tournaments just to simply get some reps under his belt in his comeback now from surgery?
I don't know whether it's the reps that make a difference or just his health. I mean, just being 100% healthy, you've got to think that his mind, the reps aren't that important psychologically. I mean, he's been in the contention to win so many tournaments, played some awesome shots under pressure throughout his career. I think it's just, being 100% healthy and trusting his swing. I mean, it's that's more important than anything else.
Peter, thanks for this. We'll be watching today in round two. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Let's have a great last three rounds.
Peter Osterhaus, longtime CBS golf analyst. And yeah, hit the nail on the head. 19 Canadians in the field. If he doesn't, at this point, I know we all want to get recognized south of the border. We want our country, we want our sports to be given respect from American markets. But so you look at the top of the leaderboard, and yes, Tim Petrovic and Michael Putnam are leading the way, and I don't know, 85% of golf fans don't really know who those guys are. Maybe you've heard of Tim Petrovic before. If we have a Canadian in that final grouping or within a stroke or two of the lead coming down the home stretch on Sunday, in this country anyway, and that's what matters, nobody's going to care about the field.
100%.
Not anymore.
And everybody will suddenly be an expert on whomever is at the top. And good on whoever it ends up being. I mean, if at the end of the day, when we're talking on Sunday, if Taylor Pendrith ends up being there, you know, you're going to start seeing the stories uncovered and you know, the features done on who this guy is, where he's come from, because he's essentially, for a lot of folks, even hardcore golf fans, I'm sure right now, are not exactly overly familiar with the name of Taylor Pendrith. So it's going to be a big deal. It was a huge deal if you go back to what it was, 2004 with Mike Weir, and he had that showdown with Vijay Singh. That was right. That was a huge moment that everybody was watching. It had a major type moment. It also helped that Vijay Singh at the time, I mean, was one of the top
it's
guys.
Vijay Singh. Vijay Singh is not what Tim Petrovic is today.
Absolutely.
An update, the amateur Taylor Pendrith is going to tee off at about 9 o'clock this morning. In terms of other Canadians, David Hearn is on the field. He's on the course. He's bogeyed the first hole, so he falls back to number two. Graham DeLette tees off in about 25 minutes from now. It is Brady and Walker on your Friday. I'm Andrew Walker. He's Eric Smith. You're not a big CFL guy, and that's okay. And the one thing I've learned out here in the East, it just does not get the play than it does out West. That's
okay. That's enough CFL talk, fellas.
All right, but we're going to talk about 50-50s because this is another difference between Western and Eastern Canada. Last night at Commonwealth Stadium in Edmonton, the Eskimos and the Stampeders set a record for the largest 50-50 pot. It was over $340,000. $340,000.
The take home, and it was actually even closer to it was $348,534. So $348,000. That was the take home. So the actual money raised was just under $700,000.
So there was like, I don't know, 40,000 maybe at the Stamps and Eskimos game last night. Big rivalry, of course, in Alberta. So it's basically like it averages out to like $85 a person on 50-50 tickets. It's incredible.
It is incredible. I think yesterday's, I don't have the number in front of me, but I actually bought 50-50 tickets yesterday at the Jays game. I rarely do it just for whatever reason. The lady was standing right beside me and was like, yeah, give me three for $5. Sure, why not?
Sure.
And I think yesterday's take-home, and it was, you know, jammed at the Rogers Centre, I think it was 8,000.
That's embarrassing. Do people not do, like, if you go to a minor hockey rink here, do they not do 50-50s at every game? Do people not know what 50-50s are here?
I guess they just don't care as much. I mean, I think the bigger question is, as much as people care, and good on them, they care that much to spend nearly $100 a person?
Well, I remember when the World Juniors were in Saskatchewan, God, this would have been probably five, six years ago. So it was Saskatoon, Regina. And these aren't 40,000 seat crowds. This is more like, you know, 11,500 at the Credit Union Center in Saskatoon. And the 50-50s were a couple of $100,000. People go bonkers over it out West.
It just proves again that there's nothing to do in the West. So you know what? I'll just spend my money.
You're right.
And hope to win so that I can get the hell out.
Mike Wilner was going to join us. He's going to be pushed back a little later on the show. Jeff Blair is going to join us about 10 minutes from now. He has a great column right now, sportsnet.ca, on the whole Kyle Dubas advanced stats debate, but it's maybe not what you think. Jeff Blair is a veteran guy. He's been there. He's done that before, as it wasn't that long ago, Eric. Hell, on base percentage was a controversial stat, let alone wins above replacement or slugging percentage in the majors.
Well, this ties in well to the conversations that have been had over the course of the week with the Maple Leafs hiring as well, when you just think about numbers and advanced stats and what they mean and how they play into the game. So it's a brave new world we're in right now.
But baseball, and we'll ask Jeff Blair about this, but baseball is different, right? Baseball, and
well, there are many numbers. Baseball is different based on the fact that if a guy hits 300, that's awesome. But if a guy shoots 30% in basketball or has a 300 save percentage in hockey, that's terrible. So, I mean, that alone in a
sense.
And we all
there's
understand
the game,
why.
There's the
we
game
all
of failure.
Why.
Yep.
Yeah. So that alone tells me that baseball is different, let alone all the other stats and numbers that are in the game.
Did you watch the recent movie, Trouble with the Curve?
No, I haven't seen it. Sorry, I haven't seen it.
It's actually pretty good. Clint Eastwood's a baseball scout. Amy Adams.
Yeah, I know about it.
Who's not that hot.
She isn't.
Who's not that hot is his daughter.
Although she did look pretty good walking around without a bra for pretty much the entire movie. And what is it? I'm forgetting the name of the movie that was out last year.
I don't know. Anyway. So
not Superman.
So Clint,
yeah, Lois Lane was walking around without a bra for half the movie.
Clint Eastwood is this old baseball scout, and his eyesight's going, and his front office is a bunch of young guys who are big into the numbers and don't think he can do the game anymore. And there is a basically this dialogue, a famous dialogue from Clint Eastwood in this movie, and he says, all these computer programs, all these advanced stats, you know, can't tell me how good a contact he makes or can he hit behind the runner. All these little things. And I wonder the old school, new school war in baseball, if it's as intense as this one seems to be right now in the NHL. 7:35, it is Brady and Walker.
American Hustle, by the way. American Hustle.
American
Hustle.
That's
outstanding flick.
She's okay. She's a one if we're on the 1-0 scale. I'm Andrew Walker.
The 1-0.
It's called the binary code. I'll explain it to you in the break.
Oh,
I'm Andrew Walker.
Stats.
He is Eric Smith. Yes, it's advanced stats. ranking girls. Jeff Blair joins us next. Marcus Stroman, his thoughts on him, and advanced stats in hockey and how they compare to baseball. His column is up Sportsnet590.ca.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good morning, 7:43. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith. Eric Smith's in for Greg Brady this week. It is Brady and Walker. Brady's back on Monday on the much-talked-about James Reimer arbitration day. Won't that be fun?
I'm sure he'll be primed and ready to go.
The day where your backup goalie gets awarded the same price as your number one goalie. What an era we live in. The Jeff Blair Show is coming up at 9. Jeff Blair joins us now on Brady and Walker. Great column up right now on Sportsnet.ca. The stats debate, not all it's cracked up to be. And I'll read a little excerpt from this. This is Jeff Blair, posted yesterday. A word to the puckheads from somebody who has been there. Relax. You'll still be able to debate who gives 110%, who is clutch, and debate who's good in the dressing room. Your heart and soul guys are still going to be heart and soul guys. Kyle Dubas and his fancy stats won't change that. It's a really interesting article, Jeff. Kudos to you. But as a guy that's been there before, does the advanced stats debate in hockey feel like what we went through in baseball, certainly when you were in press boxes around the league every night?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you've got essentially most of the split seems to be age-related. You know, guys who are younger hockey writers are sort of more inclined to look at that and to look at the new stats, just as the, I guess, sort of the vanguard, if you want to call them that, of the sort of young, the baseball stats guys. Most of them were young guys. A lot of them were bloggers. A lot of them were out of the mainstream media. You know, and then, of course, they ended up getting hired by teams, right? Bill James and just about every team now has somebody who's, I guess I'll use the phrase, a numbers cruncher. But yeah, it's totally the same. And it's like anything else. You know what? 10 years from now, about a third of the stats, the new stats that guys come up with are going to be, it's not that they'll be found to be irrelevant, but a lot of them will just be so complicated that people won't talk about them. You know, it'll be when five guys get together, five bloggers get together, we'll have a debate about them. But guys aren't going to be sitting at the bar debating it. It's like VORP. Nobody sits at a bar and debates VORP in baseball. But what you will find, and what baseball found, is there will be stats that, you know, people will look at and go, well, that makes sense. And I think the biggest thing, and baseball really saw this, and I know I talked to Alex Anthopoulos about this, and he said the biggest thing it did is it kind of forced us to start thinking, okay, how can we be more efficient? You know, what can we do to take advantage of technology? And, you know, the Jays, for example, and I pointed this out, it's not always stats, but what happened is as a result of this stats revolution or whatever you want to call it, the Jays started looking at the velocity of the ball coming off the hitter's bat, and they started using that to make decisions about, you know, which free agent would we go after, which guy would we give a long-term contract to, which guy aren't we that interested in. Not every organization does that, and that's not a stat.
It's technology.
It's technology, yeah. And, you know, that interest in technology sort of came from the debate that started around stats. But it's like anything else. Eventually, the good stats survive. The weak stats just kind of peter out.
Yeah, Jeff Blair, our guest, he will host Baseball Central today at noon, and then Primetime Sports, he's in for Bob McCown at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Another excerpt from the article, you say, we live through Moneyball and the misinterpretations made by both sides of the argument. And you're right. I think we can overanalyze at times in baseball and in hockey. You detail a story that I thought was pretty good with Dan Duquette of the Expos. And you had a classic number cruncher with, of course, a member of the old guard, Felipe Alou, going head-to-head.
Right. And, well, Dan Duquette, the Expos may have been the first team to actually hire somebody, to actually pay somebody to numbers crunch, because Mike Gimbel, although Bill James was working at the time, Bill James wasn't really employed by any team. He was sort of beavering away in Kansas City on some of his stats books and some of his approaches. But Mike Gimbel was kind of this reclusive New York guy. And as I pointed out in the story, he actually made the New York Times because the police were called to his apartment. They found four live alligators.
Of course they did.
Living in his bathtub. But Dan Duquette hired this guy to, you know, crunch numbers and essentially sort of present a different view of what, for example, the Expos lineup should be. And, I mean, I remember sitting in Felipe Alou's office, and Griffin, Richard Griffin of the Star, told the story yesterday as well. And he was a PR director then, you know, and Felipe's phone would ring, he'd pick it up, and, you know, the receptionist would tell him it's Mike Gimbel, and he would just say, oh, tell the man I'm not in, and he'd hang up. And Mike Gimbel's big thing was he thought that the Expos lineup would profit from having Tim Spear bat leadoff. Now, there are a couple of issues with this. First of all, Tim Spear was hardly the classic leadoff hitter back then. Secondly, he wasn't a very good hitter. And third, he was the third-string catcher. So there were some issues as far as Felipe Alou was concerned, putting his third-string catcher at the top of the batting order every day. So, I mean, that was sort of my first, you know, the first taste of new stats. And actually, when Dan Duquette moved to the Boston Red Sox, he ended up hiring Gimbel, giving him more money. What he didn't realize, though, was Gimbel had this, Gimbel was a bit of a publicity hog. So the Boston writers started calling Gimbel, and he would make these outrageous pronouncements about the Red Sox, what they should be doing and what they weren't doing, and how Dan was screwing this up and the manager was screwing this up, and eventually got fired. But it was the thing with Felipe. It was funny. Felipe's just, I don't want to talk to this clown.
Jeff Blair, our guest. I'm Brady Walker. I'm Andrew Walker. He's Eric Smith.
Jeff, at the end of the day, what kind of guy is Alex Anthopoulos?
Alex Anthopoulos is about 85% old school and 15% new school. You know, people look at Alex, when he came in, they looked at his agent and the fact that J.P. Ricciardi promoted him twice and said, okay, this is a numbers guy, and he's far from it. He's way more old school. He might even be more old school than Gord Ashe was when Gord Ashe was GM. And Alex always tells this story about when he was starting out scouting or when he was first interested in scouting. The Expos basically gave him free rein when he was, you know, in his early 20s. As a scout, and he talked about how he would sit with some of the veteran scouts at Olympic Stadium during batting practice. And, you know, he said he had this thing for Jeremy Giambi. He looked at Jeremy Giambi's stats, and he thought Jeremy Giambi is just, you know, this guy, oh, he'd be a great player. The stats were so impressive. And then he said, then I saw him in batting practice, and there's this kind of fat, roly-poly guy who can barely make it down to first base. You know, and he said that was kind of an eye-opener for me. You know, yeah, you can look at stats and sort of use it as a baseline, but when you actually see the player, at some point you have to trust yourself. It's like people who say Colby Rasmus is a better defensive center fielder than Anthony Gost, because a couple of years ago his defensive zone rating was pretty good, but anybody who's watched Colby Rasmus play knows he's not anywhere near the defensive center fielder that Anthony Gost is.
Did you see trouble with the curve with Glenn Eastwood that
Yes.
That movie. The rant at the end where Clint Eastwood talks about, you know, stats won't tell you hitting behind a runner or the sound of the bat. How accurate of a portrayal is that to what some of these old guys really think?
It's actually not that accurate.
No?
I know a bunch of, I know a handful of old school scouts, guys who are in their 60s. One guy who's in his 70s. And, yeah, I mean, they've got preconceived notions about what they should be looking for. But everybody now, knows how to use a laptop. And everybody now understands that you can take what you see, look at the numbers, and try to find what supports, what intuition you have, what aspect of intuition you're using as a scout is supported by the numbers, and what aspect isn't. But it's much more accepted now, and you've got players talking about it in clubhouses. Guys,
yeah.
You can go into any clubhouse and have a debate with somebody about wins above replacement,
Got about 30 seconds here really quickly, and part of it you detail here. If you had any advice for the new Leafs 28-year-old AGM, what would that be?
Stay the hell off Twitter.
That's good advice for anybody.
Seriously, stay the hell off Twitter. Go away for 4 months. Go in your office. Do your job. Don't respond to the lunatics that are going to be, hammering you. And don't listen to Coach's Corner.
Jeff Blair, our guest. He will host Baseball Central Noon today in Primetime Sports. Thanks, pal.
See you, man.
Jeff Blair, really good article up on sportsnet.ca right now. It was posted yesterday, and the title is Stats Debate, Not All It's Cracked Up to Be. It is a long read, but that's when Jeff Blair really gets into his best stuff. So it is a must read. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith here on Brady and Walker 753. Mike Wilner will join us to talk some Blue Jays later on in the show. We'll take some of your calls next. Jays win 3 of 4 against Boston as Marcus Stroman dominates. You had one game for all the marbles right now. Who's on that mound for you? Is it Marcus Stroman, or is the guy who pitches tonight in Mark Burley? It probably comes down to one of the two. Jays and Yankees coming up tonight. Jays have lost 16 in a row at Yankee Stadium. Can they end that skid tonight? They are tied with the Yankees for that second spot in the wild card, 3 games back of the Baltimore Orioles, whose series continues with Felix Hernandez and the Seattle Mariners tonight. Your calls when we come back at 8:02, Jays Yankees at 7 tonight on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.